You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. My first guests today are Tressa Millam and Megan DeSlover from AWARE. Hello, Tressa. You're the Children's Services Coordinator there. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, and Megan DeSlover, Children's Advocate. Hello.
Hi.
To both of you, or maybe to Tressa, it's been a long time since I've interviewed anyone at AWARE. I was just wondering, how's the organization holding up these days?
You know, it's same as always. We're here and we're providing services. And despite whatever might be going on, we are always open and always welcoming people to help wherever we can.
Megan, would you add anything to that?
Well, as we are a crisis center, and we definitely are having our share of crises, but also great moments too with women and men and families and children. So we're happy to be here.
AWARE, in addition to providing those resources and shelter to folks in need, is also a solid source of teaching and education for the community. You've offered so many great programs in the past, from nonviolence and communication to healthy relationships for people of all ages. And now you've got another course coming up. So please tell me about the Nurturing Parenting Program.
Yeah, so we are running the Nurturing Parenting Program here. Megan and I are both facilitators. Nurturing Parenting really works with the whole family. So ideally the kids and the parents are attending the program and in the classes. We're learning a lot of the same information. Obviously the kids' information is, depending on age, kind of dumbed, you know, down for their level, and parents might go a little bit deeper into some stuff. I run the parenting portion of that class, and Megan does all of our lovely stuff with the kids. Kind of jealous. Kids are more fun. No, I'm just kidding. They're not. I really have a lot of fun getting into it with parents too. And yeah, it's different than some other parenting classes that might be available in the community, like Circles of Security, Parenting with Love and Logic. Those programs are typically like a 6-week program. They're pretty short. They're like an hour and a half. Ours is a bit more intensive. It's 13 weeks as opposed to six for just the lower level of people, the basic stuff. But there's three different levels that a family can kind of enter in at, depending on what their needs are and where they're at as a family and what they want to do. And at the education level, it's a 13-week program. So it is a bit of a time commitment, because that's 13 weeks in a row, which is roughly like 3 months of coming to class and learning about different healthy relationship dynamics within the family.
Now, nurturing parenting is not just a catchphrase or a title that you made up for the course. It's a science-based approach. What does it mean to teach and apply nurturing parenting?
What we're doing mostly is establishing nurturing practices within the family. So this program is specifically designed for families who may not have had a lot of experience with healthy relationships, with healthy functioning within a family dynamic situation. We are a domestic violence agency, so we run this program because it is geared towards prevention of any kind of domestic violence occurring within the home or the parenting dyad. So that's a little bit different than like Circles of Security, but we do go into all of the same kind of topics that you might address: discipline, attachment, trauma, all of that stuff gets delved into in our classes.
Megan, anything to add?
Do you want to add something?
I was looking because the nurturing, I recently took the nurturing parenting training. And so they have a whole philosophy based on these five different, I was trying to read my chicken scratch. I'll do my best. But the first is the family is a system, and that's why it's working with parents and kids. And then the second is building empathy, and that's really like huge. And that's a piece that we hone in on particularly, because it is just a significant, if you can have empathy for your kids and if your kids can have empathy for their siblings.
Or empathy for yourself.
Or, oh yeah, and for yourself, that there are just better outcomes. Generally, people are more satisfied, you know, when they understand that everybody is experiencing things. And then the third one that is all parenting is a continuum. So, you know, there's a whole range and we're trying to meet people where they're at. And people learn with their head and their heart, being and doing. And then this fifth one, I'm sorry, I don't know if I can read what I wrote here, but next one is adults who feel good are better parents. So that's one thing we really try to work on. And then the seventh is all families deserve happiness, acceptance, and empowerment. And then the eighth is meeting them where they're at. So I have never run a nurturing parenting group yet with children. This will be my first time, but we are looking to do it with teens specifically for this round that's coming up in September. So Tress will be with parents and I will hopefully have a teen group.
And Tressa, do you have experience with a nurturing parenting program in the past?
Yeah, I've been running it here for about the last year. We are doing it via Zoom, which is not as fun. Ideally, we would be doing it in person, but COVID kind of changes plans for everybody a little bit. So we are running it via Zoom. I have greatly enjoyed the discussions that I've been able to get into with my parents. We really do try to do an intake carefully with each family and figure out what are their struggles, what are their strengths, and what can we help in creating a better situation for everybody so that everybody in the family, kids, parents, everyone feels happier and healthier with what's going on in the house.
Yeah. So you had mentioned that it's a bit of a time commitment and the parents who this course might be targeting are probably juggling a lot right now. So how do you outreach and support the families who may need this the most?
Yeah, we're trying to get the word out, obviously. That's why we're here and let everybody know like what we're doing. I work with OCS carefully and closely and let them know that we're doing that. So families that might be involved with OCS can be often referred to us. We try to make sure that I have good close networks with all the service agencies in town so that any families that might be struggling know about it. And just because we are a crisis shelter, we get a lot of phone calls from families who might be struggling because we operate a crisis line and we can then refer from that and get that out. But it's really, I have two adopted kids and that has been a struggle for me because of their trauma history to kind of like incorporate that into my family, which is much healthier than they're used to. And I have found it incredibly useful in just my own parenting at home and how I'm going to deal with my kids who come from a wholly different background than I come from and what that trauma, how that's going to play out for them and what I can do with my parenting to kind of switch that. So I think it's also a really good course for anybody who's like a foster parent and has children coming in who have extreme trauma histories, and you have to parent them in a wholly different way than you would parent your own kid. And so it's really been helpful for me to kind of learn that and how to do that. And I've had great success in my own home with that approach.
I wonder if either of you could say a little bit more about that. I'm aware that this program is evidence-based, but it's also trauma-informed, which is something we hear a lot lately. But I would love to hear some examples of how that's applied or how that's taught in courses like these.
Yeah. So one of the big reasons we used to teach parenting with love and logic prior to switching over to nurturing parenting. I did not like that because it was not trauma informed in that it often told parents, this is what you need to do. And this is the right way to do it. And just go forth and life will be better if you do that. And that is not the case. That's not how families operate. That's not how relationships operate. You can't give one swift answer to everybody. Everything is so varied and so different. And so trauma-informed means that you're really stopping and being thoughtful and thinking about what are the experiences that this family has had, right? What is going on for them currently that are going to make things maybe a little bit harder to hear or understand? My kids, for instance, like I use a stern voice a lot in groups, in whatever I'm doing. Like that's where my line is. Like I let you know with a stern voice, I can't handle that. If I use that with my kids at home, they immediately switch into trauma brain mode, thinking that they're going to get hurt. And so I have to really change how I parent and try to be really soft with my tone, which is really hard sometimes. To help them understand, like, hey, you've reached that limit, right? And we're kind of pushing here and I can't go further than this, or I'm going to lose my cool a little bit. And everybody has different triggers, different things that happen because of things that they've experienced. You know, I've been in a car crash. And so if I drive by a semi, I'm super traumatized. Like I'm still so traumatized from that my anxiety shoots up and I get really anxious and I'm super scared and I'm hypervigilant over everything. And so trauma-informed really means that we're trying to understand what are these families' experiences? How are these parents parented in ways that might come up and make that scary, or our brains kind of switch into this mode of not being able to cope with things. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Oh. Well, I also want to say the design of the course is supposed to be, the way that we facilitate is supposed to model kind of the healthy relationships that we're going for. And so the way we approach it, and then the actual structure of the classes has this really consistent check-in and then like review of, you know, what we talked about last time. And then there's a discussion question and then a lecture and an engagement activity. So we're doing, it's just consistency and modeling are really a big part of it to help with the trauma informed.
And because kids need consistency.
Because kids need consistency.
I need consistency. Well, yeah. Megan and Tressa, thanks so much for that really interesting background. This sounds like an incredible course. When and where is it taking place? How can folks sign up?
Yeah, we're starting September 6th. So we'll be running September 6th, Monday, September 6th through December 6th, Monday, December 6th, 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Via Zoom. So you don't have to leave your house. You can join in via Zoom. And if childcare is an issue, you can absolutely talk to us about that and we can see what we can do to help out with that situation if needed for anybody. If that's a barrier, we don't want it to be.
Also, prior to the course starting, anyone can call the AWARE shelter, the 586-6623, can call and just ask for Tressa or I. We're going to connect with people initially, and then hopefully, my hope is that I can meet with the teens that are going to be a part of the group face-to-face, but the rest of the group will be on Zoom, but I'm hoping to at least be able to meet them so they can kind of, we can establish a relationship before they have to see me on the computer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for coming in today. It was really great to check in with AWARE. I see that you guys are actually there right now and looks like you're doing some repainting. So anyway, thanks again so much for all that great information. Best of luck with the course. And again, you can call 586-6623 to get more information. Thanks so much, Megan and Tressa.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Perseverance Theater has lived up to its name. It's persevered through the roller coaster of a pandemic. And although the ride is not yet completely smoothed out, Perseverance Theater continues to adapt to changing circumstances and has managed to keep working towards a new season. Our next two guests are here from Perseverance Theater to pull back the curtain and let us get a peek at what's in the offering. Here with me, I have Leslie Ishii, Artistic Director. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, thanks for having us again, Shelley.
Yeah, and Frank Delaney, Managing Director. No relation to Shelley Delaney. Hello, Frank.
Oh, are you able to hear us, Frank?
I can't hear Frank.
Okay, I think they're working
on it. He was just here. All right. Well, it's great to talk to you both today. And while we're waiting for Frank to join, Leslie, maybe you can tell me a little bit about how the summer wrapped up at Perseverance.
Awesome. Oh, my gosh. We're so proud of our young artists that performed in our Star 2021 showcase and spent 2.5 weeks with us. It was a program about their self-determination and what they wanted and needed to express, especially given, like you said, this roller coaster of a pandemic, you know, that seems to persist. So they were awesome. They took the main stage. And I can say that our next generation and the future of Perseverance is in great hands. They were awesome. So I'm so proud of them. And the audience was wonderful. They masked up, they came, they supported, and they gave them a standing ovation at the end. And anyway, it was a great way to culminate the summer. And so happy we were able to have the program again. It was mostly in person here in Juneau, but we did have a couple students that tuned in virtually and created stories, wrote their own pieces. And there were some local stories here that were original as well. So just really proud of our young artists. Yeah.
Oh, that's so great to hear. I'm really glad that they had such a good time. So one thing that's exciting to hear today is that you've announced your plan for an in-person 2021 season. I know that could not have been an easy decision. Leslie, how did Perseverance make the call to reopen?
That's a really great question, and it was quite a process. And Frank, please chime in. As you can imagine, as we've been working those muscles of adaptation, being great adapters, and I think we have earned the right to call ourselves Perseverance Theater. we've just hung in there. We've gone virtual. And Frank, I'm going to pass the baton to you because Frank's been sitting on a committee, too, that's really kept abreast of all of the COVID protocols and regulations that helped inform our decision. So, Frank, I'm glad you made it. Yay.
Yeah, thank you. Some technical problems, but I think I'm all in there now. Like Leslie said, I was sitting on a statewide committee that helped write some guidelines for theaters to reopen and come back into spaces. So it's been something that's been on our minds for a while, and we've been following all of the national trends and trying to figure out when the best time for us would be. You know, for everybody who's ever been into our theater, you understand some of the logistical difficulties that we have there with things like social distancing and getting people in and out of the space safely. And so once we felt confident that we understood all of those little things, we had the best, most up-to-date information from the national sources and the local sources and the doctors, we looked at a date and feel like we can make it happen, and we can make it happen safely. And we've been wanting to get back to having people in our building as soon as it's feasible and is safe. And we feel like this is going to be the moment.
That's really great news. I'm very glad to hear that. I know the last year was tough, but let's look ahead to the good times. I'm so excited to hear the lineup for the 2021-22 season.
Awesome. Well, the first show is Voyager 1 by Jared Michael Delaney. What is it about the name Delaney, y'all? It's a very popular name.
I don't know. No relation here.
No relation to me either, although I did meet him and he was my roommate at the Last Frontier Theater Conference in Valdez.
Small world for the Delaneys.
Yes, no, it really is.
I love this play too. I'll be directing it, I'm happy to say, because I can't wait to dive in. And it's a journey through space and time. It juxtaposes the 1970s to the future. And there's a relationship with rock and roll, which is really cool. And just taking those learnings from the past and thinking about our future is kind of what we're doing now too. It's got humor, it's got pathos, and it gets you thinking. So I'm really excited for that. And then A Clink at Christmas Carol is back by popular demand on demand. And we're excited. That'll stream through December 20th to the 26th. And then the next show, after the first of the year, we'll start into production, The Brothers Paranormal by Prince Gomavias. I love this show. And it will run February 18th through March 6th. And this show, I mean, Frank, when you read it, the whole staff was like, we've got to do this show. It's based on the horror genre.
Mm. It is. It's spooky, fun, and it does deal with some timely issues as well. But if you're into that kind of scary, tense, it's not like gory scary. It's more tense and psychological thrillers. Scary. It's more on that end of the scale than the other, but it's a fun play. We're really excited about it.
I love this play too, because Prince Gomavias, who's a Thai American playwright, is really into horror and knows that in the Thai community, actually back in Thailand, they make really beautiful, really cool horror films. So that's how he became a fan of horror. And he thought, I got to bring that to the stage. So I'm really excited about it. And it's a Thai family who has a Ghostbuster business who meets a Black couple because they are Katrina climate refugees, and they feel that their apartment is haunted. And so they come to this business to basically get help. And of course, it goes from there. I won't say too much because it's best if there's a surprise. And then, of course, we could not leave this out there in COVID sort of, you know, where we left off in that mystic place of unresolved, you know, shows and that last season. We have to bring back Fun Home. We're so committed to it. We know the community was looking forward to it, and so are we. So Fun Home will be our final show of the season. As you know, that music is by Janine Tesori, and book and lyrics by Lisa Crone. And it's based on, the graphic novel by Alison Bechdel. And it's a Tony Award-winning show, and it will play April 22nd through May 8th. So we're so pleased to bring that show back and really finish that out.
Remind me again what happened with Fun Home.
So with Fun Home, we were in rehearsal. We were just a few days away from Tech Week, where we all start putting all of the elements together, and about 10 days away from opening when we were shut down by state mandate due to COVID, and we had to send everybody home and put the show up on blocks. And so the set was 90% done. It was all almost there. So this whole season, we're leaving that set in place, and the other two shows the sets will incorporate elements of that and be built on top. So it's an interesting and fun challenge for the designers.
I love that. That's a great use of what's already been created. Well done. Well done. And I just wanted to ask, so Leslie, you'd said Clinkett Christmas Carol will be streaming, and there were some, I don't know if you meant that would be streaming virtually or something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. It's you know how we produced it last year. So it's already recorded. So we'll be able to offer it on demand, which is wonderful. Then folks between those dates, December 20th to 26th, can tune in at their convenience. Yeah.
Should say that, Clinkett Christmas Carol is a free offering by our agreement with the playwright. We are not charging tickets for that. But if people enjoy it and they want to make donations based on that show, then we are welcome and happy to receive them.
Excellent. I mean, there were some absolutely heroic efforts to bring live theater to a virtual platform last season. I was really, really impressed with that. And what were some of the biggest successes you had? Did they kind of help support the theater through the pandemic?
Absolutely. In fact, this ties in with what I also want to share. I felt every show was a success, and certainly a great process for us to go virtual with the wonderful support of our associate managing director, Josh Lohman, who also comes from a filmmaking background. So we had some skill sets working there. So I always lift up Josh for his major contribution. But one of our largest successes was Spirit of the Valley by Frank Henry Cass. And we had, that was one of those live virtual kind of hybrid, you know, theater productions. And we had a matinee because we're almost 1,000 students and teachers were able to tune in because we were virtual from all over the state. And what a beautiful, perfect show to honor the land and the relationships with these siblings, with their culture and traditions. It was really wonderful. And so we're taking all those learnings forward. And I can say that opening the following season will be, fall of 2022, will be another Frank Kitas play, Where the Summit Meets the Stars. And we had workshopped that right before COVID hit at the end of 2019, I guess. It seems like a lifetime ago. And so it's a very anticipated piece as well. So we're excited to open the next season with that show.
Yeah, I'd like to add that Spirit of the Valley, that student matinee that you're talking about, that's the single largest student matinee in the history of Perseverance Theater. Because we were able to get so many students connected to that. It's larger than any venue that we typically perform in. And this last season, even though we were shut down and we were doing streaming, we had 5 shows and we had more than 15 community events of different types, community conversations and presentations. We also used our expertise that we were building to help out some other organizations present their streaming content. And so it was a huge learning experience and very successful given the constraints. That's the easiest way to say it, I think.
and to build on that, thank you, Frank. Yes, I want to share too that the Black Alaskan Art Matters program will be back. And those 3 curators are back with us. So we're really excited to keep lifting up the Black Alaskan art community and support them to build their network and continue forward.
That's so great to hear. I'm really glad to hear that not all the news was bad in the last year and that you guys really managed to truly persevere. So thanks so much for speaking to me today, Frank Delaney, Leslie Ishii. I wish we had a little bit more time, but I know our listeners can go online and find out more information at ptalaska.org. Thanks again for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Shelley. Always a pleasure.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. This week, the UN released its latest report on climate change, and it contained just devastating findings that reverberated all over the globe. Perhaps the timing of this Saturday's climate fair couldn't be better. A chance to look at the climate crisis through the lens of arts. 2 organizations have put together this remarkable event, 350 Juno and Theater Alaska. Joining us now, we have Elaine Schroeder, co-chair of 350 Juno. Hi, Elaine.
Hi.
And Christina Apathy, director and actor for Theater Alaska. Hello, Christina.
Hi.
Hi. Elaine, let's check in with you. How did you feel when you read the UN report that was released on Monday?
Honestly, what I felt is that we are doing, everybody who's working on climate is doing the most important work we could ever do. I felt that I'm in the right place doing the right thing and working with the right people. And I do feel it's great that we're having this event on Saturday. Of course, the report is devastating. It's scary, but it's very clear what we need to do. In fact, the UN Secretary General summed up the findings of this report. And this report must sound a death knell for coal and fossil fuels before they destroy our planet. How's that for straightforward? Hmm.
Thanks, Elaine. And Christina, now you're primarily known around town for acting, but what motivated you to combine arts and activism for this event?
Well, I'm one of the founders of Theater Alaska, which is a newer group in town. We started in July 2020. And we're a diverse group of theater makers who bring theatrical events into community spaces in Juneau. And part of our mission is that we're committed to social justice and equity and fair play in our choices and our conversations, which is at the heart of the climate change movement. Our survival is a shared effort, and we are partnering with 350 Juno here to put on this event.
And I have to say, this sounds like a pretty unique event. I can't think of another time or another one that I've ever talked to anyone about. So, Elaine, can you just give me an overview of the Climate Fair for a Cool Planet taking place this Saturday? Tell me how it came to be.
Well, we were thinking of having, because of the pandemic, we want to be safe. And 350 Juneau, over the years before the pandemic, has put on many public events, including expert speakers, musical performances. We had Libby Roderick. But we knew that the pandemic was not going to be over. And so we thought, hey, let's grab the summer and let's do a really strong, good event winding up the summer. And we had worked before with Theatre Alaska, and they had been actually put on a play for our every Friday live streamed rally in front of the Capitol during the legislative season. And so we knew that they were up for it, and we had contacts. And I always personally felt that communicating through the arts is a very important medium for reaching people. And you would like an overview of what's going to happen?
I understand that there will be some live theater, music, dance, and other activities, and that 350 Juneau will be sharing some information. So I wanted to talk to Christina about the performances, but if there's anything you want to add, Elaine, about the other elements of the program, that would be great to hear.
Okay, so what we're going to have throughout the program, and it's going to go from 3 to 5, we're going to have a couple of tents out. There's going to be a children's activity station in one tent, where kids are going to be building contraptions out of recycled materials, which is going to be very cool. Then we're going to have a tent, under the shelter, we're going to have two tables, an action table where people can sign postcards, and we'll stamp them and mail them, that are pre-printed demanding of Biden the Glasgow UN climate talks are really a big deal, and they're beginning in 83 days. And they are the first major talks since the Paris Agreement 5 years ago. And they're really our best and our last hope for a livable planet. And so we want to pressure Biden to do certain, shall we say, bold commitments and actions before the start of these big UN climate talks in Glasgow in November.
Got it.
And and there'll be an information table. Oh, and there's a tent with ice cream donated by COPA.
Oh, great. That's a nice touch. And Christina, could you tell me about the performances on the program, please?
Sure.
I know it's a long list, and they sound really cool, so I'm excited to hear about those.
Talk quickly, maybe. So the performances, we're starting, there's background sound installation by Hank Lentfer. And then we are having performances that include a dance piece choreographed by Haley Duran called Mother's Children, performed in front of Taku, the Alaska whale sculpture. There's music presented by Melanie Brown, original music, and three short plays at different locations in the park. So we're going to be asking the audience to kind of migrate with us a little bit. Those three short plays are A Miraculous Party by Connor Lendrum, in which two friends attend a party in the future and are confronted by a surprise change in climate. Blood on the Leaves by White House Champion of Change recipient Madeline Sayette, which is based on the traditional story of the hunter and the bear. And the comedy Six Polar Bears Fell Out of the Sky This Morning by New Zealand playwright Alistair Emerson, which is a satire, obviously, and a take on how disinformation explains away hard truth. There's also a special recitation by three students of different ages. They're going to be performing excerpts of speeches from environmental activist Greta Thunberg.
That sounds so interesting. Christina and Elaine, I wish we had more time to talk all about this and about climate change, both what individuals can do and how we can impact the larger forces, but perhaps we'll save those discussions for the fair this Saturday. I want to thank you both for your time. But one last question, how can we find out more about this event?
Well, you can definitely go to the Theater Alaska website. And they have a beautiful depiction with tons of information about the event. And if you have any specific questions, you can also email 350juno@gmail.com.
And that address is theateralaska.org. And we're also on social media as well, Instagram and Facebook.
Elaine and Christina, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today and for organizing this very timely event. I hope you have a great turnout and a great afternoon today.
Thank you so much.
Up next, a chance to do a good deed and go on a whale watching cruise. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. If you'll pardon the pun, it's a whale of an opportunity, a whale watching cruise in which the proceeds go to benefit the animals that the shelter cares for and puts up for adoption. My final guest today is Samantha Blankenship, Executive Director of Juno Animal Rescue. Hi, Samantha.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Thank you. You're here to talk about the whale watching cruise. That's also a fundraiser for your organization. But before we get into that, I just wanted to ask, how's it going at Juno Animal Rescue this summer?
It's good. It's been a little busier the past few months. That's definitely we've seen more people going out of town. We've had more boarders, and we've also had more animals being surrendered. So it's busy, but we're used to it.
You mentioned boarders. So in addition to serving as an animal shelter, what other services do you offer for Juno pet owners?
We offer doggy daycare and dog boarding services. We also have a professional groomer on staff as well for all of your grooming needs. So all sorts of services.
That's great. Well, coming up in a couple of weeks, the Juno Animal Rescue is organizing a fundraiser for the organization. Tell us a little bit about Whales for Tails.
So Whales for Tails is our annual fundraiser, and we weren't able to do it last year, obviously because of COVID, but we're able to do it this year with a little, with some limitations, but we're glad that we're still able to do it this year. So it's a whale watching cruise, which is made possible through a generous donation by Allen Marine. And we have a fun whale watching cruise with people who love animals, and there's hors d'oeuvres, and there's a cash bar, and we go around and see if we can find some whales. And we also talk about, we have a naturalist who'll be on board and talk about the shelter a little bit, and all of the proceeds go to benefit the animals that we serve at Juno Animal Rescue.
Oh, that's great to hear. I know that those fundraisers are pretty popular and that your organization has a great reputation. So tell me again when and where that's taking place and how we can purchase tickets.
So it is the evening of August 27th. So it starts at 5:30 and goes to 8:30. And the catamaran leaves from Auk Bay, Dawn Stadter Harbor in Auk Bay promptly at 5:30. So we ask people to get there 15 minutes early because we can't wait for people. Tickets are $100 each. And you can buy tickets at JunoAnimalRescue.org, or you can also buy them at our front desk.
That's great. And the cruise includes food, and there's a beer and wine cash bar as well, and hopefully lots of whales to watch.
Yeah, and we'll also have some other stuff, that you can buy to support JAR. So a lot of our merchandise, so we always offer wine glasses, beer glasses. We have some cool new hoodies and t-shirts and different stuff like that. So we'll have all of that on board as well. But it should be fun for everybody. This year, of course, we're required to have masks on the vessel. And with the new implementation, masks are required in all areas of the vessel. Of course, that's subject to change due to any different COVID regulations. So
I think we're all getting used to that, especially the subject to change part.
Right.
Well, we have a little bit of extra time today, and since we already discussed the fundraiser, I thought I might ask you about an issue that's come up during the pandemic, which is COVID pets. Could you please explain a little more about how pet adoption has changed throughout the course of the pandemic and is still changing?
Sure. So what was great about the beginning of the pandemic is a lot of people were working from home and they wanted to adopt pets to stay home with them. So shelters emptied nationwide, which was fantastic. But shelters nationwide now have begun to see animals with behavioral issues being surrendered back at a higher rate than normal. So lack of proper socialization with individuals and other dogs was really common when people were working from home or not entertaining in their home. So we've had several animals arrive in the past several months that lacked socialization skills, specifically dogs. So we place those animals, especially dogs, into our second chance training program so that we work more extensively with them on their training to try and get them a better chance at finding their forever home. So, you know, the pandemic was hard on pets too. So a lot of them, especially if they were adopted when they were puppies, they didn't get that correct socialization that pets normally do when people are out and about and they're seeing new people, they're seeing new animals. So shelters, like I said, nationwide have really started to see what we're calling COVID pets, which are pets that just have zero socialization skills.
And so at the Juno Animal Rescue, the Second Chance program gives them kind of an opportunity to acquire those skills before being rehomed again.
Yeah, so we'll work with an animal on, you know, certain things. So we have some animals that maybe have a bit more severe separation anxiety because they always had somebody at home and now they're left home alone. So we work with them on getting them comfortable with strangers and new situations and try and get them to where they can interact appropriately and be a little bit more calm in their surroundings. So hopefully, you know, with people wanting to adopt pets, have a little bit more patience for some of these special needs animals that maybe need a little bit more time and energy devoted to really correcting something that has happened in the past year and a half.
Well, Samantha, I wish we had a little bit more time to talk about that, but thank you for for sharing that information, and hopefully some folks listening will be willing to give these animals a second chance. I'm not glad they're at the Juno Animal Rescue, but I'm glad the Juno Animal Rescue has the resources to care for them. Thanks again.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being with me today, and good luck with your fundraiser at the end of the month. Whales and Tails, go check it out at the Juno Animal Rescue website. Bye, Samantha.
Great, thank you very much.